legit.
Welcome to Strata Stories. My name is Thomas Schreiber, and I'm the Director of Marketing here at Strata. Strata is a single EMR platform and revenue cycle management service for physical, occupational, and speech therapy practices that helps you achieve a 99.99% reimbursement rate. On today's episode, Paul Singh, the CEO of Strata, talks with Justin Stiver, the owner of Total Therapy Florida. Justin grew the practice from one to now seven clinics across Florida. Paul and Justin talk through how to build a million-dollar clinic with healthy margins, determining employee compensation and incentives, how to upsell additional services, the key to physical therapy businesses succeeding outside of local neighborhoods, and lastly, Justin provides an update on his content strategy and explains exactly how they've been creating content in the clinic. If you'd like to learn more about Strata and see how our EMR and RCM works, head over to stratapt.com to book a demo. Now, without further delay, here's today's episode.
Give me like the 50,000 foot overview of what your content efforts look like today. Are you recording patient visits or going into a studio? What's the 1 minute summary of what your content efforts look like at Total Therapy right now?
So zooming way out, I believe that in order for physical therapy businesses to succeed, there has to be a way that we can reach people that aren't just living in our local neighborhoods. Whether it's a brand strength, maybe you don't do anything outside the local neighborhood, but just having a presence on a larger scale is going to be where the competition lies. Because even if you're only specifically competing with the guy down the street, if the guy down the street has a national presence, brand, and reputation, everyone's going to go to him versus you. So I do think just as the world opens up through social media, through technology, I do think that the stronger competitors are in that space anyway.
Yeah.
And sticking with the traditional model where you have to see a patient, spend 1 minute of your time and get $1 for that minute. And as things get squeezed, insurance reimbursements, Medicare rates, and things like that, we are racing to the bottom when you're trying to compete with just that. But the thing that I see and have seen happening is that our patients, when they come into us, they love us, they trust us. We are one of the most valued healthcare providers in our patients' eyes. And they've been to them all. They've been to their surgeon. They've been to their PCP. They've been to us. And they take what we have to say about the musculoskeletal system as equal as anybody else. You know, so what we say matters. And PTs in business aren't capitalizing on that factor. They're not selling products to their patients at the rates they should. They're not selling extra services to their patients in the way they should. So I think it's up to us to get outside of this model and start acting like we are, which is a top tier provider in the health and wellness space, not just you got hurt and now you have to do PT because your doctor told you to space. We need to get outside and start tapping into this bigger industry. And this is the only way to really do that. And there's all kinds of negative headwinds on PT. Everybody's complaining. I mean, if you subscribe to a couple of Instagram accounts that have a lot of the physical therapists getting out of school and stuff like that, PT specific accounts, there is so much negativity out there as far as we're not making enough money. We're seeing too many patients. We're getting burned out. We're not respected. And honestly, you got to get outside of that mindset and do something about it. And there's a couple people, Anthony Maritato is one that kind of always tries to challenge people. I think that he sees it the same way and says, well, let's go out. And he actually made a really good post the other day. I don't know if you saw it, about what can PTs do to get people in their doors? Here's what other people have done in other industries. He mentioned, I think, the Michelin star rating restaurants. I don't know if you saw that post. And then right after that, there was a PT from my school. He posted something about Walmart announced that their average salary for their managers is now $128,000. Starting salaries are $90,000. And the post was basically like, that's more than we're making as PTs. And we should feel sorry for ourselves. This is BS. We're getting screwed here. And immediate thought was that type of mindset is going to kill our profession unless we just forget about that. Because that Walmart is one example of one business in a giant space that can pay their managers $128,000 per year because of how successful they have been in that space. Mm-hmm. And not every company in that space has been able to do that. There's a lot of people failing right now in the same space Walmart's in. and their managers are not making that much money, and they're being fired, and they're being laid off, and they're filing bankruptcy and everything else. So you can't look at one successful business in one space and say, wow, our whole industry compared to that business. I honestly think we have to be Walmarts of the healthcare space.
Right.
When is someone going to stop complaining about the macro picture and start doing something about it? So that's my thought here. And I really do feel like this is the right way, is to just start putting out content and start to let people know that we're not just one clinic in one town that only does this. We can use all those skills, all that great stuff that happens in the clinic when you're treating your patient belongs in the eyes of the person that's not having physical therapy at that moment.
So first of all, by the way, I agree completely. And I think this is one of the, this topic of marketing, again, it gets such a bad rap because I think a lot of middlemen and a lot of like crappy consultants have just sort of overloaded the term of marketing. And now it's got this bad rap. People kind of like either overlook it or hate it or make some other excuse. But to your point, what you were saying there at the beginning, especially when you talked about this idea of putting content out there that's going to be accessible to people that are not just in your backyard and the benefits of that, I can't agree more with you there, because the reality is that we're all operating in very competitive environments. Just like you've got competitors that are a few miles away from your locations, Strata, whether or not, obviously my job is to drink the Kool-Aid, right? I love Strata, but I also got to recognize that the vast majority of people don't know and don't care how we're different. They just see a bunch of different EMRs and RCM and billing companies out there. And so the summary of all this is that when you think about marketing, and what I find fascinating about what you're doing with Active Adult is that as CEOs and growth focused CEOs, I should say, this focus on creating content for the people that are not yet your customers, regardless of whether they could ever be your customers because they're 1,000 miles away, this is the important work that most companies fail at because they overlook it or they make 77 excuses for why. But the reality is the future of every industry, including PT and healthcare, is more competition. It's lower margins. It's not going to go back to like 20 years ago or 50 years ago. And no industry has ever done that. No industry's ever gone backwards. So I just think it's fascinating what you're doing, because the reality is that the numbers don't lie. And you probably know them better than me, but particularly with your active adult content or your content for active adults and stuff like that, there are tens of millions of potential eyeballs for that content just in the United States every year. And it's evergreen. And I'm speaking as, you know, a tech nerd here. It's fascinating because this is one of those particular audiences where content that you create today, for example, for, I'm making this up, but content you create today on fall prevention or something like that is just as applicable today as it will be in January of 2025 and 27 and 28, 29. But again, I think people are kind of like sleeping on this idea. So if you don't mind me asking, like, what is it when you've got a business to run? You're in a position now where you don't necessarily have to see patients every day and all that stuff. But, and just so I set this question up, for me, for example, Thomas and I hit record on our personal recording once a week, but then we're also recording 3 times a week with guests like you. So that's from a hours standpoint, we're talking 3 to 4 hours a week. So it's not a lot, but it's not zero.
Yeah.
What does that look like for you? Is that like a camera crew following you around? Or what does it look like? If another practice owner is like, what is Justin doing?
Yeah, I'm doing, we're shooting 2 Tuesdays per month. We close at 3:30 on Tuesdays in the clinics. So we grab one of our clinics and we start setting up around 3:30. We're usually shooting by 4:30 and we'll shoot until 8, 9 o'clock. So I'm spending maybe 10 hours per month myself. And that usually gets us 3 to 4 videos, 8 to 10 minute videos. Right now where we're at, we haven't gone live yet, but we've shot 9 of these videos. We have maybe 6 now completely done. And it's taking honestly like more time too, because I didn't know what I was doing. I've had to reshoot takes and all that struggle. So the first couple of days, maybe I got 1 video done. I had to do a bunch of takes and screwed things up. And what I've actually learned was writing scripts and doing this stuff is what takes time. And you don't really need to do that. You just need to know what you want to talk about and just kind of let it flow. We actually shot 2 or 3 videos where I had a teleprompter and scripted things out, and they got edited, and my guy spent hours and hours editing, and he gave them to me. He's like, here you go. Here's the first 3 videos. I said, all right, throw those in the trash. That's horrible. Okay. we're never doing it that way again. Let's sit down and let's figure out how we can save time, make things look more authentic. And I've learned that those are kind of go together. Time-saving things are authentic. And that's all we really want to do is sound authentic. And that's much better. So now we can go up there and I can look at the script an hour before, write down maybe 8 bullet points per video and go out there and get them done in 3 or 4 hours. So maybe an hour and a half per video. And if we plan on doing one video per week, then we're talking 1 to 2 hours of time for me. I also have a person editing full time that's getting a lot faster as he learns. So we're going to be doing the social media stuff. We're going to be doing all the short content, all the long form content, all that stuff is going to be totally doable with one person full time. And other than that, I'm still running the business. And honestly, we just got done with the end of the year financials, like every other business owner probably has. And we're looking at all the numbers. And one thing I'll go back and add to what we were here to talk about earlier was in my 8 clinics that I have, the profit margins go up a lot when we are very, very busy. So if you're operating at a $500,000 to $600,000 revenue in a clinic, for us, because we have a lot of overhead and we spend probably more money than we have to on certain things to build that strong brand, we might be operating at a 10% profit margin at those numbers. But as we start to grow towards, this year was awesome. We actually had 3 clinics break the $1 million mark, which was the first time any clinic's ever broken that mark.
Wow.
But we had 3 clinics break that mark. And those clinics, you start seeing the profit margins going from 25 to 27 to 30%. And then all the clinics dropping below 500,000 lose money for us. So if you're talking about the private practice owner that's sitting in that $400,000 to $600,000 range, I feel their pain because they are working their tail off and they're not seeing those margins where they want them to be. So doing something like this where you can grow to that $1 million mark, I think that's what opens all the doors for success, even if you want to stay within the private practice space, not doing anything outside like we're doing. And what I find is that it almost is taboo to spend the money needed to get from 600 to 1 million, right? They might have to spend an extra $80,000 to get there, and they would never do it because they can't imagine, because right now they're operating at a small profit margin and they're thinking, how do I spend $80,000 that I don't have to grow this business? But I'll say once you can get up there, you start seeing profit margins shoot up through the roof and everything works out much better on the P&L.
Man, that's good stuff too, by the way, because it's like you're the second person this week that's actually talked about profit margins sort of unprovoked. And it's really cool to actually see what real profit margins look like. I think a lot of people have gotten used to the idea that they're going to be in single digit profit margins and that's what is normal. And while it may be normal, it doesn't need to be that way.
Right.
So I appreciate you sharing that.
And it's really cool conversation to have with your team too, because you don't want them to not know what's going on. You also don't want them to stress about every percent of profit. And right now, PTs are freaked out. I mean, I had 3 or 4 PTA combos ask me this year, hey, is our PTA is going to get phased out? Are we going to lose our jobs? Like, is our career over? Like, should we go and find another career? And because of all this doom that's being talked about on Instagram and Facebook and everything else, it's always Medicare. Everyone's freaked out. So it is nice to be able to let them know, like, hey, because our company is dedicated to growing and spending money on the marketing and the business development and the reputation, our numbers are here, here, and here. And every year they've gone up 30%, 35%. And we're getting to the point now where we're doing fine. I don't know what everyone else is doing, but they're probably not doing fine if they're at that $500,000 or $600,000 revenue range, because it's tough. You got to know your fixed costs and everything else. But every time we can add another therapist on, we do great. So it's nice to be able to have that conversation with the therapist and let them know that our company is doing great and here's why. And then they buy into the whole process of saying, well, okay, it's kind of tight in here, but I'm going to welcome on this next guy because I know that the health of our company is being busy.
This is super interesting. So one of the questions we've gotten, so we've got this event coming up. It's essentially office hours for practice owners and stuff like that. And we've been inviting practice owners to just submit questions so that we can kind of queue them all up for this. And it's interesting, you talking about this kind of brings up one of the questions that seems to pop up pretty regularly is this idea of employee compensation incentives? Because there's two sides to the coin here. Like, if you talk too much about your revenue and your profitability at the practice level, it might cause people that don't understand how the business works to just think they should be asking for more raises. On the flip side, it can also cause what you kind of alluded to, which is maybe more conversations about what they can do to help. So how do you think about that? Or do you at all, like, if you're willing to talk about that as a practice owner, how do you balance that? How much information do you share with the overall practice? And then how do you balance that?
We don't open up the P&Ls to everybody and let them see every line. What I do like to explain to people every year, every quarter, we look at how much revenue they're producing as a therapist, and we explain just the dynamic of how this works. We got 31 actual revenue producing therapists. We have 27 non-revenue producing people in the company. We have expenses that are fixed. We have costs. Here's what the industry average says that we should be going towards as far as what percentage we're paying you of how much revenue you're coming in. And I explain it like this is just a benchmark. Every business is a little bit different. I said there's big practices that they have outside people saying, here's my money. I want this much return on my money. And then that's how their businesses are held up. And they have to produce returns of this size or else they're not feasible anymore. And those companies, I think they get bad raps in the industry because the easiest line item they can control is how many patients per day their therapists see, right? Mm-hmm. So they're seeing more patients per day. They're making more revenue, but they're paying their therapists more and everything else. We don't have to have X profit margins. We need to be a viable business with good enough profit margins to have cash, to be strong. If something happens in the industry we can capitalize on, we have cash to do it, but we don't need to show X amount of profit margins. We need to be healthy. So what our expectations are, maybe slightly lower than the industry average, okay? But they are still a certain number here. So if it's 2.5% of what you're paid and what you cost the company, you should be earning that to the company. Here's where you were at last year. Here's where you were at this year. Here's the things that you can control. Here's the things that you can't control. So what specific units per visit percentage were you at? What breakdown were you at versus your peers on a CPT coding? This and that. Here's what you can control. What you can't control is that your schedule was totally full all the time, because that's our job, is to put patients on your schedule, kind of. But you can also control that your patients adhere to their plan of care, that they don't cancel, stuff like that. That moves the needle. So it's a tough discussion to have with people, but you have to say, you earned the company $175,000 last year. Here it is. You got paid $100,000 last year. You're not where we need you to be a successful company.
Interesting. Yeah. Wow.
So that's kind of the conversations we have with people. We want to give you, because everyone wants raises. You can say, like, we cannot do it as we are right now. So as a team, we're going to work to get better. We're going to put more patients on your schedule. And once that patient's on your schedule, you're going to do a better job making sure they stay on your schedule and making sure that you capitalize on billing for that patient. And we've always had one patient one-on-one. That's what we've always done. I would say when I started this business, 50% of the outpatient practices in this area also were the same way. Now, I can't think of another practice that treats patients one-on-one for all their patients. There's some double booking going on with everybody that I know in this area. There's probably someone out there, but I don't know. The reason why it's happening is because they have to make more money. So that's a conversation I have to have too. I have to say, what's more important to you? Do you want to see patients one-on-one, or do you want to be double booked and get a $20,000 raise? Because those numbers can still work out either way. We just have to talk about it. And then once you explain that to each therapist, you learn that not every therapist is in the same situation. Mm-hmm. I have therapists saying, double book me. If I can get double booked twice per day and make an extra $10,000 or $15,000 per year, do it. And I have other therapists saying, honestly, the only reason that I love this job is because I don't have to get double booked. I'm in a financial situation where I would rather love my job and not get double booked than get double booked and earn an extra $15,000. So that's a conversation to have with your therapist, just to make sure you understand where they're at. And then it's up to us to make the policies to make those people happy. So We're actually looking at something right now where we might open up certain therapists to double book the patients that they select off of their schedule that are best for double booking, whether it's an insurance type or if it's a total knee patient that's been here 8 or 9 times and the therapist doesn't really need to be there right there holding their hand every second of the day. In fact, it's a better situation if they're not doing that because we're trying to get that person. The whole goal is to get them independent. So if we're holding their hand through every step of the way the entire time, we're probably doing them wrong because when they get done with us with PT, they feel like they're lost. Whereas if we give them a little bit more space, then they're probably going to do better anyways. Long story short, Paul, getting back to it is I think you need to have the conversation of where your therapists need to be as far as earning revenue and getting paid what they're getting paid, and then give them options to do what makes them happy.
I didn't expect you to share all that, but I think that is probably one of the most tactical pieces of advice that I don't think anybody's ever shared that I've seen in the PT world. If you don't mind my asking real quick, how often do you do that exercise with your team? Is that a quarterly thing, annual?
It's a quarterly with the directors, and it's about once a year with everybody else.
That's incredible. That's so incredible. That's great. I want to be respectful of your time, but I want to see if I can just kind of squeeze one more question in there, and then worst case, we'll push it to the next episode that we do together. One of the other questions that seems to be coming up pretty regularly on our end from practice owners is how they should be thinking about upsells. Now, it's always interesting because when practice owners even ask this question, you can tell they feel dirty just asking it. Yeah. But I'm curious if there's like a teaser or something there that you'd be willing to share. And maybe, we can expand on it in the next episode.
Now, are you talking about upselling services, selling laser or selling dry needling or doing that?
It's intentionally broad. For example, one of the questions that came in, I'm trying to pull it up here real quick. Thomas just shared it with me, but it's kind of broad. Like one of the questions that came up is, what types of products or additional services should clinics think about selling? Mm-hmm. And it's such a broad question, but I think that in this particular case, this person, this practice owner that submitted this question is trying to figure out how to
make more money.
Yeah. Make more money off of the, it's like, how do you increase average order value in the e-commerce world? It's like the grocery stores.
I don't understand why it seems dirty to upsell somebody something in the PT world. I understand if you're trying to sell them something they shouldn't have. If you're trying to convince them of a product that you know they don't need, that's a whole different ballgame. So I think you have to start off by asking yourself, do I actually believe in the service or the product I'm trying to sell them, upsell them? And if you actually believe, I actually believe that if a person does laser therapy, they're going to benefit from it. They're going to feel better and they're going to be happy. Why wouldn't I want to sell them laser therapy at that point? In fact, if you feel like it works, then sell the crap out of it because you're helping your patients out. If you feel like it doesn't work, then get rid of it and find something else. But as far as like all the retail products go, I will say that touching back to what we talked about earlier is our patients are going to buy these products regardless from somebody else in a much less informed way. So why is someone coming into therapy? We're spending an hour with them to build our trust. They believe that what we're saying is true, and they know that we have their best interests in mind. Why aren't we having the conversations about where are you buying your bands that we're telling you to use? Where are you buying your Swiss balls or your ice packs or your pulleys for your shoulder? Instead of just saying, hey, just go off Amazon or do this. Why don't we get involved there? So I would say every PT clinic should build out their SKUs that they sell with the retail space. And I'm not saying how to do it. There's a lot of people that I don't think should stock a bunch of products. But if you point them in the right direction and you have an Amazon affiliate link and you say here, you know, we have our own store, go here and everything that we use in the clinic can be found here. There you go. But there's a lot of services, a lot of products that a patient's going to get anyway. And if you think it's going to help them, go ahead and sell it to them. And honestly, our future depends on us being able to make more money than we make strictly through insurance reimbursements. So why not expand?
Yep.
We're perfectly positioned as the top tier provider in this space to have the patients buying stuff from us. The hardest thing is to get your therapists who are already tapped out, literally by definition of their minutes are totally maxed out. We're telling them that they need a bill for every minute that they say, maximize every minute. And then the hardest thing is to get your therapist to buy into working an extra minute or two to sell something that they don't see a direct return on. So I think that's probably more like what that person's asking. How do I get my therapist to upsell?
Yeah.
And I think if you get them bought in to your company and the profession as a whole, saying that it's our job, we are responsible for making sure that this business that we love is viable and successful, and selling lasers and selling retail items and selling wellness packages and doing that stuff is the difference between us being able to operate at the productivity we operate on or doing what some of the other larger chains do and just throwing two or three more patients on your schedule. So that's the conversation I've had. I said, look, guys, sell laser. That's going to keep you from having to treat two or three more patients. It's the same thing. We need X revenue to make this viable. And everyone says, well, I'd much rather do an 8-minute laser session three times per day than see three more patients and do three more notes and everything else three times per day. And that's the benefit of opening up the financials enough to let your team understand how the business thrives.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Strata Stories. Strata is a single EMR platform and revenue cycle management service for physical, occupational, and speech therapy practices that helps you achieve a 99.99% reimbursement rate. If you'd like to learn more about Strata and see how our EMR and RCM works, head over to stratapt.com to book a demo.